Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Terence Corrigan. Let's get into our first news story of today, and this is an interesting piece in the Daily Maverick about micro-targeting through Facebook and Instagram, that is political micro-targeting by South Africa's political parties. Now, according to the data that has been released by Facebook slash Instagram, also known as Meta, there are only opposition parties currently spending their money on Facebook advertising. Now, this is a little bit interesting to me as a sort of starting point, which is, I think that so Meta requires anyone who basically runs a political ad to kind of align themselves, you know, make open who they are and what's behind it. This was in the aftermath of accusations that Meta had been used by foreign actors to influence the American election. They changed their policies to make it a lot more transparent in terms of who was funding political adverts. But the data that we do have about South Africa suggests that the DA is by far and away the largest spender on political ads on Facebook and Instagram, spending about 2.3 million rand in the last 90 days. The Freedom Front Plus comes in second with 245,000. The referendum party behind that, the Good Party, Rise Mzansi, the IFP, Build One South Africa, the African Christian Democratic Party, and spending just around 8,000 rand. So that's, I don't know, probably like one advert, is Al Jamaha, the governing party in Johannesburg, technically, I suppose. So what's interesting is you can also see the exact parameters by which the political parties were targeting. So, for example, the Freedom Front Plus, perhaps unsurprisingly, in their targeting of their adverts, based it on information about what Facebook pages you like. For example, do you like Cakenet or Geesgenoot or Afrikaanse Groot pages on Facebook? Well, then the Freedom Front Plus is much more likely to serve you an advert on your Instagram or Facebook feeds. They also seem to be mostly targeting younger people. The DA, which spent by far the majority of this advertising money in the past 90 days, seems to be targeting people living in the Northwest, as well as people living in rural municipalities in Mpumalanga. So that's quite interesting, because that suggests to me that they're maybe trying to target voters who they don't think they can reach in other ways, possibly people who are, you know, not listening to the kinds of media that they are more prevalent in. Quite interesting also was Rise Mzansi's spend was about 50,000 rand on 23 adverts over the past 3 months, but these were only targeting women between the ages of 27 and 45, which is a interesting insight into their campaigning strategy. Terence, what do you make of this? I mean, firstly, what's your take on the fact that the ANC and EFF don't appear to be advertising on these social media platforms, at least in the last 3 months? And furthermore, what do you make of what this says about the various parties and that are using these platforms to advertise?
Well, look, I do think that the absence of the ANC and the EFF is an interesting phenomenon that probably requires further investigation and explanation. It's possible that it's going through some sort of front, or put out by individual branches, or some sort of what the Americans would call a political action committee. I don't know. But maybe they've just done the calculations that this is not where their supporters are. I think what this tells us is that political advertising is less about trying to sway people's opinions, although there is an element of that, then to appeal to those whom you who are maybe broadly in your camp. I think this is the kind of logical extension of focus group politics that started to emerge in the last 30 years or so, where you determine what people are interested in, you target your messaging and your offerings accordingly. Now, this is often criticized, I think, with some justification, that it becomes very transactional. If you don't like what I have to offer, I'll offer you something else. And also that you are left in a sort of echo chamber. I think the journalist of this article makes that point quite the point is well taken, that if you are simply seeing the pictures put up by parties that you are all things being considered likely to favor, well, that will just that'll just confirm your worldview. Now, it probably wouldn't change your voting behavior to see those of other options, but I do think that, that sort of thing is important to understand, you know, let's say how the other half lives. I understand there was once an experiment done where people in where Republican and Democratic partisans in America were basically told to swap each other's news feeds for a month. When it came out, well, what they found was that it wasn't so much there was a change in the way that either side would vote, but there was a lot more empathy for why the other side would think as they did. And I think we could use a lot more of that.
Interesting. This is quite interesting because, of course, many of the world's most developed countries have, you know, for more than a decade now, been very invested in social media as a way to, you know, change the outcome of elections. This was famously a big part of Barack Obama's campaign in 2008. Mm-hmm. And I think South Africa is often a little bit slow to take up some of these things. I think particularly the ANC can be a little bit more old-fashioned when it comes to political campaigning like this. But it is, you know, if we could get the data for something like TikTok or something like Twitter, it would, I think, be quite interesting to see, because you might see different political parties on those platforms as opposed to Facebook. I do think this is also an insight into why the DA does quite well in elections. It's not just the larger amount of money they're spending in this particular realm, but it's the fact that they are utilizing this platform to reach voters who they probably couldn't reach otherwise. Mm. And I think that's part of the election machinery that often gives them advantages in elections.
Look, if I could make one more comment, I think in the ANC's case, their support base tends to be disproportionately older, disproportionately rural and African. That is a population that I think is still very wedded to radio.
Right.
So I think the return on African language radio for them, it just outstrips anything that they could get through Facebook.
Exactly. I think that is a very big market. Those SABC radio stations, I think, are in many places the most important media in South Africa.
Right.
Anyway, let's move on to our next story. And this is a spokesperson for the South African Communist Party. It says that Western countries only thrive on war and oppression to remain in power, and they are now targeting South Africa for the support of South Africa for the liberation of Palestine. This was during the May Day rally yesterday at Athlone Stadium. This is why the SACP says that South Africans must unite behind the ANC in upcoming elections to prevent neoliberal forces and capitalists from taking over the government. Said, quote, "These elections... these are massive elections, not only for the African National Congress and the people of this country. These are international elections against exploitation. These are elections between the African people as a whole and against the oppressors of the West who want to take us back." Well, that was an interesting time travel back into the year 1970. But Terence, what do you make of this?
Well, you know, I think it's almost refreshing in a sense to see that dogged commitment to ideology remains on some of our lips. Look, on the question of the West only thrives through warfare, it's their bosom buddies in Russia who now have a full scale invaded another sovereign state, special military operation. And let's remember that that the Cuban army saw service on many foreign shores. Ethiopia and Angola, plus in Venezuela now. I think that there were contingents in places like
supporting Maduro.
Yeah, places like Nicaragua. I understand they also supported insurgencies in El Salvador. But the point is that you must also bear in mind that they received, as did them, just the medical diplomacy from certain clients, they received large amounts of payment. And one Cuban defector said that unless the Spanish a linguistic institution has changed its definition, that made them mercenaries. Just saying. I think this is simply the mindset that someone like Mr. Mapela is invested in. I can tell you this, though, that South Africa is not significant enough to, warrant a kind of full-on regime change agenda because of a case at the International Criminal Court, International Court of Justice with Sorry.
Yeah, I think it stands National Court of Justice.
I do get my I do get my my
ineffective my global bodies well, mixed up.
You know the thing is that that South Africa, you know, as far as its challenges go, frankly, those dastardly imperialists can just sort of watch watch ANC governance unfold and let it take its natural course. But yeah, look, I mean, this is what you get from people whose ideological and political identities sort of outstrip reality. A belief in a sort of messianic role in the world, and the sense that everybody else sees things through your eyes. And I think that's been probably the great hamstring on South Africa, or the great torn hamstring on South Africa's diplomacy.
And I look forward to the SACP blaming Western sabotage or something for the return of load shedding after the elections.
Yes, indeed.
Perhaps I'm being too cynical.
that's an option.
All right. Last one, speaking of communists, Julius Malema has been on the campaign trail. Recent polling suggests the EFF is not in a great position. The Social Research Foundation's daily tracking poll, which you can find on their website, shows the EFF performing a little bit under where they performed in 2019. There's also been some data from Ipsos, which in my experience of looking at the data, or my opinion, tends to underpoll the EFF a little bit, overpoll the EFF a little bit, suggesting that the EFF will be on around 11%, which, if that it turns out to be the case, basically means almost no growth for the party, a little bit of growth maybe. Malema also seems to have recognized this. He's talked more about deploying the ground forces, as he calls them, of the EFF and ramping up campaigning. And I think that's the context in which to see this latest speech that he gave. He was talking to mine workers at the EFF's Workers' Day celebration, and he said that mine workers must receive 17,500 rand as an entry-level salary as a minimum a month. He was in Hammanskraal when he said this. He went on to say, "We are going to share the wealth of South Africa. The people of the mines risk their lives going underground, not even sure when they will return. They dig out the gold, they take out the manganese, but if you look at their salaries, nothing speaks to what they are working for. So we want mine workers' salaries to be like the gold they produce." Terence, what do you make of this? I mean, being a miner is, you know, it's hard work, but it is also a job you can get generally without that much education beyond high school. And also, it's mostly kind of physical labor, and 17,500 rand a month that's not a bad wage.
I
would say that's quite high.
Yeah, look, there's a few things going on there. First of all, funnily enough, I remember Philip Dexter making a statement like this back in the 1990s. I think he was either an ANC MP or he went off to NEDLAC, and he was saying we're insisting right. that miners in South Africa should be remunerated along the lines of their colleagues in Germany and the United States. Interesting for a communist to raise those two countries rather than Cuba or North Korea. But there it is.
Right.
Look, I think that because of South Africa's particular history, mining has a particular significant, particular ideological significance. You know, so the read about this in something like Alan Payton's Cry of the Beloved Country, and that's you know he was a kind of business sympathetic writer, but so there's a reason why you make that sort of claim. I think the other thing is that it's about throwing big promises with one or two assumptions. One, that you'll never have to actually deliver on them because you won't have to carry the can, but you know it's a populist one-upmanship game. Or two, that you assume that somewhere there's this vast vault of riches, like Scrooge McDuck's vault. And all you have to do is get the key from whatever white monopoly capitalist happens to have it dangling around his neck next to a little bag of gold. That's not how things work. By all means, you can go for something like this, which either means your commodities are so expensive that no one no one will buy them. Two, you know, you can do it for sort of 3 or 4 months until everything collapses. Or three, you just print the money and say, you know, right. Be damned, your money's not worth anything anymore. And then one, 170,000 a month, because it'll buy you even less. But you know, here's just, yes,
this is exactly the problem is that the mining industry at the moment is in a very bad state. It keeps shedding jobs. So yes. It doesn't matter. You can make those salaries as high as you want. You know, at the rate we're going, it's not going to be too many miners left if we don't turn things around in the mining sector very soon.
You know, but here's the thing, and you know, possibly the brutal truth is that the sort of muscle labor, labor intensive mining that we've had, that's probably an industry that is slowly ebbing out. We have vast mineral resources, but not the kind of big nuggets that South Africa, you know, was raised on. You've got a phenomenon in places like Australia now. We have a little modular, mine that where 4 or 5 people can go and extract, you know, a small volume that is not economically viable with the current methods we use. But those are generally, you know, highly skilled, highly capable technicians, and they do command, you know, the kind of wages and more than that Malema is talking about. But the thing is, then you have to have the skills pipeline to produce them.
Right, and you need to also make the country a safe enough investment environment for people to be willing to risk that kind of capital investment. In other words, you can't be passing expropriation laws that will allow the government to expropriate property with nil compensation.
Yeah, that would be that would probably be a big no-no.
Indeed. All right, that is, I think, the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. We will, of course, be back tomorrow on Friday. I hope you all have a wonderful day. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.